If you grow up in a toxic family, then very often you find yourself in a toxic situation as an adult. It's way more common than I think any of us would like to admit. In fact, I can say to you that of the people that I've spoken to and dealt with, probably about 95% of them grew up in a traumatic situation. So today at queenbeing.com, we're going to talk about exactly what you can do to break the cycle of negativity in your own life and in the lives of other people who you might affect, so generationally and personally. So let's get started.
Closed captioning provided by Athena Moberg and CPTSDFoundation.org.
I'm Angie Atkinson, and this is Toxic Relationship Rehab, where I help you discover, understand, and overcome toxic relationships. So if you want to take back your life, embrace your power, and become the best possible version of yourself, stick with me, hit that subscribe button, and let's get going. One of the things I talk about all the time at queenbeing.com is the love movement. Let's talk about what that is and what it means.
During the years I've been researching and learning about narcissistic personality disorder, narcissistic abuse, and toxic relationship recovery, I've learned something significant. It all starts in childhood. I know, it sounds cliche, but hear me out. Nearly every single survivor of abuse is also a survivor of a toxic family environment in childhood. Strangely, this is also true for most toxic narcissists as well. Their damage just manifested differently than ours. As a parent, I know that there are some pivotal moments in a child's life and that we can have a significant effect on who they become. I also know that we can choose to raise our children in the way that we were raised, or we can choose to create something different for them. Ultimately, whether we like it or not, we can have a significant effect on who our children become. But while I think we have certain responsibilities as parents, outside of the basic physical care of our kids, we must also recognize certain boundaries that we need to honor, often boundaries that weren't honored for us. This may feel abnormal at times, especially when you were raised by a controlling, dismissive, or otherwise toxic parent, but we have to be very intentional with the influence we put on our children. It's important that we avoid trying to turn them into anything they're not, and that we encourage and validate them for who and what they are, even if what that is makes us uncomfortable. But it's equally important that we teach them to understand people and their emotions and how they affect those people, basically to teach them empathy. Why do I think this is so important? Because the one uniting quality between all toxic narcissists is the lack of empathy. So by teaching our children empathy, we can begin to change the future for their generation. The love movement is all about ending the toxic legacy one family at a time.
So when I was doing my live stream with Dana the other day, we discussed exactly how we each thought we should break the cycle, and we had a great discussion with you, with many of the people in our community. So I want to share with you a few pieces about that. So take a look. I had watched the series
Russian Doll.
Russian Doll.
Yeah.
So I watched the series, and one of the first things, of course, that I became aware of was that, and I don't want to give away too much, but essentially the main character lives the same day again and again until she kind of figures out what the right thing to do is. So she makes a lot of mistakes over the course of this time. And if you think back to the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray, same thing happened where he would wake up in the morning and it would be the same day over and over again until then he made all these mistakes. And then eventually he made the right choices and life started up again for him. So I kind of found this to be a good analogy to what we deal with, whether we're talking about in generational cycles where we come from toxic people and we create toxic people, or we're talking about just in our day-to-day lives where we kind of repeat the same patterns again and again and nothing changes. So I thought this would be a really great way for us to start off today talking about how we can change those repeating patterns that don't benefit us in our lives. So Dana, what are your thoughts on this?
I think this is such a fantastic topic, and it's such a game changer. Once we start realizing that there are patterns there, I think the biggest challenge for so many of us is realizing that there is a pattern. And one of the challenges with that is sometimes we can, like if we're dating people, let's say, for example, we might have one really problematic person and then two or three that are fine, you know, not so bad. And then maybe another one that's really problematic, and they all come across in different ways too, the problematic people. So it can be difficult to see like, okay, there actually is a pattern here. And instead what we tend to default into thinking is we just think that we're attracting this because it feels like a hit and run accident every single time. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have another abusive or toxic person in my life. How does this keep happening to me? I think through a lot of the, you know, these videos, talking to other people, starting to see, oh my gosh, this is how I keep finding myself staying. This is the thought process, the dysfunctional programming that we have, that we're not seeing a lot of these signs early on. And once we start seeing it, it's just, it's awesome.
You can't unsee it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think personally for me, it's the breaking of the cycle started with understanding my personal value in the world, because I didn't really see myself as a person who had any value for many years. And when I started to understand that and create my own boundaries and stand behind them and defend them up to a point, that's when I started to go, you know, I don't really deserve this treatment. I'm not going to accept this in my life anymore. And that's when, you know, everything sort of started to change for me, where I didn't just assume the worst of myself anymore, and I didn't accept abuse anymore.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. You know, again, this stuff is really not taught. And so a lot of the concepts around this is why it's so confusing, is we talk about self-love or valuing ourselves or knowing our self-worth, but I think that there's a lot of people out there that really don't know what that means. And for me, when I was back in that space, I thought I did value myself. I thought I was setting boundaries. I thought I really didn't see any areas that needed improvement or needed to be tightened up a little bit. I always saw myself as, oh, I'm very go with the flow. I was very, the result of that is I was very permissive about behavior that I shouldn't have been. I was highly tolerant to things that I shouldn't have been. Overly understanding. So if somebody was inappropriate, rude, demanding, critical, I oftentimes didn't necessarily internalize it, but I just thought, oh, well, they're just having a bad day, or, oh, they've got stuff in their life, or, oh, whatever. But it never really dawned on me to start distancing myself from hurtful people. Doing so felt like I was lacking compassion, or that I wasn't being understanding, or that my standards were too high. There is kind of that weird space, this kind of long, dark road, when we start figuring all that stuff out and really finding our worth and realizing, hey, you know what? I need to be treated with dignity and respect. Period. End of story. I'm not going to debate it. I'm not going to argue about it. If somebody starts crossing my boundaries, I'm going to reinforce them, or I'm going to walk away. Like, I'm just not even tolerating that kind of mistreatment. Life's too short. Like, I just don't even want to do that. But then there is that period where there's all of this questioning. You know, am I being unreasonable? What if there is no perfect person out there? Are my standards too high? Especially if we have other people around us telling us they're excusing the other person's behavior and they're justifying it. So it can really be a challenge to, like you were saying, find our self-worth and hold on to that and get validation from within, instead of listening to the peanut gallery around us saying, oh, you know, this is just how men are. This is just how women are. This is just how dating is, or they didn't mean it, or they had a bad childhood, or whatever. Like, realizing it doesn't matter. That's not okay with me.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Making those excuses for people. I did the same thing. I made excuses for people for years, for everything. You know, if they treated me badly, I would try to not take it personally. Of course I did anyway, but I would try not to. And I would try not to basically react in a negative way. I did everything I could to try to uplift whoever was in my life. That was great, except that they didn't return the favor, you know, and that became apparent to me eventually. But what I went through, when I finally went, you know, no contact with my first narcissist, you called it a long, dark road. And for me, it was like an existential crisis, you know?
Yeah.
All the things I thought I believed, I had to rethink. Did I really believe those things or not? You know, going through that sort of thing, that's what helps us to break the cycle. I mean, going through the deep inner work and understanding what we're dealing with and who we're dealing with and all of that, when we're talking about not just them, the toxic people, but also, well, ourselves.
Yeah. You know,
dealing with ourselves. I like to think of it also as like a tunnel. Like, mm-hmm. it's a dark tunnel. It's long. But somewhere there at the end, if we keep going, we get that light. And then we're able to really turn it all around if we choose to. But I also know that it's very easy to stay stuck in the cycle. Whether we get involved with other people again or not, we can. I can't tell you how many people that I've spoken to who are just almost continuing the cycle on behalf of the toxic people, even if those people aren't in their lives anymore. They continue to self-abuse. Almost. Their head keeps going. They keep hearing, you're not good enough. You're never going to succeed. Everything's going to be terrible. And then when they step outside of that and they look, they go, oh, you know, yeah, I was basically, you know, it's kind of like remnant voices of, mm-hmm. of the past in their head. Yeah.
That's a big thing too, when we can get to that place, especially if we were told that kind of stuff as a child, if we had a really critical or fault-finding parent, yeah. even if they were well-intended, to view that behavior, because through the child's eyes, we take their words at face value.
Yes.
And we're very quick to just think that they're telling the truth and that what they're saying is a reflection of us or a reflection of our decisions. But we can step into that healthy adult place and see their behavior as a reflection of them. And this was all of their fears and insecurities and unresolved baggage at play that was spilling out onto us. And we can go back. I mean, it's such a game changer when we can realize that, like, oh my gosh, here I've been listening to this person who is so controlling and fear-based in the way that they view the world and trying to talk me out of ever doing anything that I wanted to do. And I don't have to listen to this. Like, I'm listening to all of their like pathology and I don't need to, you know, I can go find other people that are more empowering and that have maybe that are on the same path, that have achieved the same goals or headed in that direction, and turn to those people for support and advice.
Right.
I think at the end of the day, it's more about kind of figuring out, you know, what works for us and what we want in our lives and what we don't. If we're staying around in a problematic or toxic situation, trying to kind of figure out like, well, what am I dealing with? Is this a covert narcissist or is this a sociopath or is this person borderline? If their behavior doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you.
Right.
I just think that's important to know. Because a lot of people do that. And I get it. I was there too. Like they get caught up and thinking like, well, but if this person's quote unquote, like just have a borderline personality disorder, then maybe they can get treatment. Maybe they can be changed. Maybe they can, down the road, be the person that I need them to be and mm-hmm. on and on. And that's a problem.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. People, we get caught up in it. And not only do we get caught up in it, but we stay there sometimes. I see people say to me all the time, like, what if they're not a narcissist?
Yeah.
What if they're not a psychopath or whatever? Well, what if they're not? Does mm-hmm. it really matter if they're being toxic to your life, if they're causing more harm than good in your life? If you, every time you spend time with them, you feel like you can't breathe or you feel like you can't be yourself or you're not, you know, you dread when they come home. That's toxic, my friend. It doesn't matter beyond that, I think. I don't think the diagnosis is really that relevant. I think it's about finding people who you don't feel horrible around every time you spend time with them. Ultimately, a large percentage of us could acknowledge that on some level, we ended up with people, or we may have ended up with people who were narcissists because something was toxic about our childhood, whether it was just your parents worked too much and you were emotionally neglected, or worse. You know, I had a client recently who didn't have a bad childhood as far as she was concerned, but, you know, when we kind of started to talk about it, it turned out that there were several kids in the family. Dad had to work a lot. Mom had her own issues. So she wasn't getting a lot of parental validation. It wasn't like it was so terrible, but she felt, I think, like she was always looking for validation as she went forward. And of course, at the very beginning, what do narcissists do? They overvalidate. They put us on a pedestal during that idealization phase, the love bombing thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's probably why that person ended up in that situation. It's not to talk bad about your parents. It's not to tear anyone down. But I think on some level, almost all of us could look into our childhood and say, oh, maybe it did start here. Maybe my inability to validate myself started here. Or maybe I didn't feel unconditionally loved, or maybe much worse. And maybe we can already know and identify what the issue was. But I do think that this cycle does not start in our own lives out of the blue. I think there's almost always a precursor to it. And many times that comes out of childhood.
I agree. I think it does. You know, we tend to learn these basic patterns of how to relate to other people, how to perceive ourselves in childhood.
Absolutely.
And again, this stuff's not taught. So, you know, I have yet to come across a person who is truly healthy, balanced, well-adjusted, and that has healthy boundaries. I've met a lot of people that I would say, oh, this person seems so like healthy and well-adjusted, but then you start spending time with them and they don't have healthy boundaries. They still have a lot of that toxic programming that we're all fed about, yes. Oh, love conquers all, commitments forever, mm-hmm. forgive and forget, that those kinds of things. That without the context of how to be self-protective and how to have self, healthy boundaries, those platitudes are really dangerous and can land a person into all kinds of problematic situations.
Absolutely. I have a super chat from the Fashion Family who says, I tell my 7-year-old your advice constantly. You're worthy, enough, smart, kind, wonderful, important. She now feels love and validation like never before. And I think that's amazing. That's how I treat my children as well, because the fact of the matter is, if we can start in childhood with our own children, we can break the cycle for them. You know, yes. We can break the cycle for ourselves as well in that process.
This is something that I think a lot of people don't think about, because they think, oh, it's a cycle for me, right?
Yes.
Like, I have this pattern in my life, not realizing, oh my gosh, I've actually been role modeling a lot of these behaviors. My children have been seeing these different relationships. And so this is how this thinking is passed down. This is how this cycle continues. And so making it a point to talk to children about healthy boundaries and standards and deal breakers, and that you don't have to be friends with everybody. That if somebody's being mean to you, then that's not a friend. How to be assertive and how to say no and how to be tactful and how to realize what we have control over and what we don't have control over. And when certain behavior is manipulative, and that it's okay to set boundaries, and that our compassion, you know, an act of compassion is only complete if it includes ourselves, not sinking ourselves to save other people, and letting them know, you know what, hey, the world is full of a lot of this well-intended bad advice. Yeah. And it's really important that you know where your boundaries are with things, and to not let other people, even if they're well-intended, even if it's us or you or whoever, to somehow accidentally knock you off course. Like, you better be able to get grounded enough in yourself to know what is right for you, what's nourishing for you, and what's toxic for you. Because at the end of the day, you're the one that has to live with those decisions.
That's right. When you say, look, this is it, I'm done, I'm leaving, and they go, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize I was causing this much pain, or I know I was horrible, but I'll do better. And then you see the changes start to happen, and you go, oh my gosh. You know, let me tell you something. My ex-husband was a perfect angel for the last week I lived with him, because for all the time leading up to that point, he had treated me horribly, and then I said, I'm leaving in a week. And so what do you think he did? He was suddenly the ideal husband for that whole week. He was perfect. I cried my eyes out when I left him, but you know what? I still did it because I knew that he wouldn't change permanently. This is behavior modification, and it's only in an effort to achieve a goal. And once they know that you're firmly back in there, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to go back to the regular old stuff, maybe faster than you expect. Dana and I have talked about this before, where, you know, if you really feel like you want to give them another chance, that doesn't mean you have to live with them while you do it. You know, you can say, look, I'll tell you what, let's take 3 months apart. Let me see that you're behaving better. This is actually what I did with my ex-husband. Let me see that you're behaving better. Let me see that you're meeting XYZ goals, whatever it was. Get some counseling, whatever, and then we can talk. Well, of course, my ex-husband did none of the things he promised, and boom, he's now my ex-husband. If you feel worried that they might change, then try a trial period like that. But don't stay in the relationship and expect it to stay good. And Dana, I think you suggested more time than that. You said 3 to 5 years or something.
I think it's really important people get clear on their deal breakers. Abuse of any kind is extreme behavior. I'm a big fan. This is not workable. Like, this is so deeply dysfunctional. They'd have to really want to change. And even still, it would take weekly therapy for years, if not decades, to even see the needle move, because that's how they've always been. So it's very difficult. It's not just how they are with you. This is, their behavior is a reflection of their mindset and all of this unresolved stuff within them that forms their personality. So it's woven throughout the fabric of their very being. And, you know, I think the only way I can even start to compare this to people is if you think about us healing from all of this stuff and learning about assertive communication, boundaries, standards, deal breakers, self-love, all of this stuff. Anybody who's ever been on this road to truly healing, you'll know, like, you can start turning your life around pretty quickly, but it really takes it takes about 3 years to really start turning that ship around, because it's like turning around a steamliner. I mean, it's not a quick thing, and you're going to keep having these moments of, oh my gosh, I slipped into this old pattern. I wish I would have done this differently. And it's difficult for us to make these changes, and we're the ones that are experiencing pain because we're the ones that are struggling with how to actually be self-protective, versus the hurtful people of the world don't experience pain when they say hurtful things because they feel entitled and justified. So they don't have that continual, basically daily motivation to examine their behavior and do things different because it's not registering as a problem for them. That's
exactly right.
Yep. So, you know, abuse, it's progressive and it's a sign of a deeper issue. And if you're going to stay with somebody, I would say separate your finances and separate. If you've moved out, I would just be very slow to combine households again. If you have children, I would say don't even entertain the idea until your kids are 18 and out of the house.
Yeah.
Because it's just chaos. And the odds of them changing enough, like they're not going to change from a porcupine into a kitten. Like that just does not happen. And
that's right.
It's too much of a risk to bring that chaos back into your life.
A lot of times when we end up in these types of relationships, we don't even know how we got there. Here's something you need to remember and never forget. You're not supposed to be scared of your spouse or your partner. You're not supposed to be scared of family members, people in your life. Your inner circle should be people who make you feel safe and comfortable and not stressed out and scared all the time. When we're growing up, whether we're in a healthy family or a toxic family, we believe that whoever we end up with will be our partner, our best friend, someone that we really connect with, someone that makes us feel safe. And when this doesn't happen, we tend to blame ourselves. We turn against ourselves and we try to change ourselves. And when that doesn't fix the problem, things get even worse. This is another example of a cycle. Remember that narcissists and other toxic people are always looking for people that they can control and overpower. They use things like criticism, isolation, intimidation, denial, and of course blaming you and other people for everything that they do wrong. And they use intermittent reinforcement where every now and then they do something nice and they keep you constantly going after that little bit of nice or that feeling that you had when you first met them, how amazing and wonderful they were. This is how they keep us hooked, that intermittent reinforcement. We've talked before about how narcissists and cult leaders are very similar. And in the case of the narcissist and in the case of the cult leader, this relationship sort of begins by that person putting you up on a pedestal, telling you you're loved, making you feel like you matter, you belong somewhere. And they're looking for someone who's vulnerable to that in the first place. Of course, once they gain your trust, what do? They push away your family and your friends and everyone else who would support you in getting out of that situation. Without support, what happens to you then? Well, you become dependent on the toxic person or the cult leader, exactly what they want you to do. They want you to feel like you can't live without them. That's part of how they keep you around. We blow off the signs in the beginning of the relationship because the love bombing part feels so good, because we feel so good during that idealization phase that we just keep looking for that feeling over and over again. We try to make everything perfect. We try to become exactly what they want us to be. And we think that if we can do that, if we could just kind of find that secret sauce, that everything's going to be okay and the cycle of abuse will stop. That's not the case. The only way the cycle stops is if you get off it. Consider it a merry-go-round. You know, the longer you keep going, the harder it is to get off. But it's irrelevant because the merry-go-round doesn't stop. The only way to stop the spinning is to get off the ride, my friend. Are you ready to get off the ride? The first step to getting off the ride is to recognize what you're dealing with. If you really are dealing with a toxic person who is actively verbally, emotionally, and otherwise assaulting you, abusing you, the first step to getting past that is to recognize that's what you're dealing with. Put a name on it. Call it what it is. Learn about the topic and keep going forward from here. Remember that you can always recover a little easier if you put your emotions aside while you're working on healing and getting out of the situation and focus on dealing with the facts. The facts then can empower you to deal with your emotions as you're ready to do it. But if you're still in a situation where you're stuck in the middle of it, stop, give yourself a minute, and try to focus on facts. Focus on who you're dealing with, what you're dealing with, and what you can do to get free and safe. You shouldn't have to defend yourself every day. You shouldn't have to fight with someone every day just to get peace. Now I want you to take a deep breath and I want you to remind yourself that whatever that person says about you either isn't true or is exaggerated. Whatever that person says about you isn't real and isn't coming from the perspective of a loving person. It's not really about you. It's really about them and their own issues. And it's okay to walk away, my friend. You'll survive. And if you intentionally choose to heal, you'll thrive. Stay strong, and please know that you're not alone. If you need support in this, I do have several free support groups at queenbeing.com, and you can check those out at the URL right here. or you can find it in the description of this video, but it's queenbeing.com/group-support or queenbeing.com/span, S-P-A-N. All right, now this brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, can you see cycles in your own life of verbal or emotional assault? Can you see cycles that kind of keep you stuck in negative places? And what are you doing to work on breaking the cycle in your life and in the lives of the other people who you might affect? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it.
Before I go, I just want to say a really quick thank you to everyone who watches my videos, likes my videos, comments on my videos, shares my videos. By doing that, you're helping me to reach more survivors of narcissistic abuse. And that's truly my mission in life, so thank you for that. While I'm here, I'd like to also say a quick thank you to my channel members, those people who choose to support me through the channel membership program here on YouTube, and you can see their names scrolling right there. Thank you sincerely for your support. It means the world to me. Before I go, take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit that subscribe button so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. I'll see you soon.